It's Happy State.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike challenges you to match your wits against those of a quartet of know-it-alls. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And I'll light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, we proceed as usual, entirely unrehearsed and spontaneously. And before I introduce our experts this evening, I'd like to make an extra special announcement. This coming Wednesday evening only, at 9 o'clock New York time, Information Please will put on a special performance for the Treasury Department, helping to start their new radio series, Millions for Defense. Our Friday night broadcasts, of course, will continue as usual. Now, tonight, our three regulars are the New York Post's Conning Tower man, Franklin P. Adams, the learned sports authority, John Kieran, and the versatile music master, Oscar Levant. And our guest is the world-famous director of the motion pictures Rebecca and the Lady Vanishes, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock, whose latest picture, Before the Fact, will be released soon. Remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question that comes from Gene Stark of Danbury, Connecticut, who apparently is familiar with the fact that Mr. Hitchcock has some reputation as a trencherman. I'm going to ask you to differentiate gourmet, glutton, and gourmand. Gourmet, glutton, and gourmand. Mr. Hitchcock.
I would say that a gourmet is a man who has fine taste in food. A gourmand, the same man who likes a lot of it, and a glutton who just eats food.
That's short and extremely sweet. And how would you place yourself, Mr. Hitchcock, as one of those three, or maybe all three?
Well, shall I say for lunch, I'm a gourmet, but for dinner, I'm a gourmand.
Very well put. And you don't have any breakfast?
Only on Sunday. Then
only on Sunday. Well, that is a perfect answer and a perfect score for Mr. Hitchcock to begin his Information Please career with. How about this one from Elizabeth Hamilton of Brooklyn, New York? Get 2 out of 3. Now, of the following plays or motion pictures, I'm going to name 3, each represents an innovation in some particular field. What was it in each case? Now, the first is The Great God Brown. That's a play by Eugene O'Neill. What innovation in its field did that represent? Mr. Levant.
Great God Brown. That was by O'Neill.
Right.
And wasn't there... there was a scene, or a love scene, I'm not sure, about racial differences. Is that right?
No, that's not what I'm after. Mr.
Mask stuff.
Mask stuff. Right. More specifically, what did the masks mean, Mr.?
The mask... as I recall it, meant how the man wanted to look and then how he really looked.
Yeah, so he hides his true self behind the mask that he turns to the world. And they kept on taking these masks on and off all during the play until you didn't know just exactly what you were looking at, which I suppose represents a considerable innovation. That's
quite
right.
Might interest Mr. Levant to know that that was played by Mr. William Harrigan.
Remember that, Mr. Levant?
No, it doesn't interest me.
Nothing like a little gracious conversation to start the evening off with. Now, how about the cabinet of Dr. Caligari? What innovation, Mr. Hitchcock?
Building the scenery as though from the mind of a madman.
Yes. Has it ever been used since, Mr. Hitchcock?
I think not.
Not that I know of. So apparently it was an innovation that just didn't take.
Yes.
You have to have madmen in your picture to...
Today we do the same thing by trick photography.
It's simpler and perhaps less expensive that way?
Absolutely.
Very good. Now, how about Becky Sharp, the movie Becky Sharp? Mr. Hitchcock again.
I think they used a new form of Technicolor for the first time.
Yes, it was
if
the first...
I remember rightly, there was an excess of powder blue.
You have a very good memory. I wouldn't know. Mr. Levant had his hand up and I think was going to say the same thing. The first complete picture using Technicolor.
Not only say the same thing, I was asked to buy the stock.
And that's why you're working for us now, I guess. Here's one from S.D. Levin of Hollis, New York. Oh, just fool around with us, boys. I want you to construct a fairly complete human body out of movie and play titles. You don't have to begin with a head if you don't wish, but let's see if we can get some movie and play titles, each of which contains some part of the body. Mr. Levin.
The Years by Virginia Woolf.
Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah. Very good. All right. Now, we've got two sets, two ears. Mr. Adams, next.
Arms and the Man.
Arms and the Man. That gives us a pair of arms. Mr. Kieran.
And the Man.
Well, should we stop, Mr. Adams?
As far as I'm concerned.
Let's get a few more. Mr. Kieran?
Three Faces East.
Three Faces East. That's very good. Mr. Levant again.
Chu Chin Chow.
Chu Chin. Hey, that's very good. That's very good. How about Back to Methuselah? Might be one. Any others you can think of?
Moon Calf.
Calf, yes, Moon Calf. Very good. Mr. Adams.
Uncle Tom's Cabin.
I think I'll stop on that, Mr. Adams, if it's all right with you.
There's a new movie being made by RKO called Unexpected Ankle.
There was one, The Unexpected Ankle. He's playing straight man to you tonight, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Mr. Hitchcock. Now, here's one from Phyllis Tucker of New York City. I haven't stumped any of you gentlemen yet. In his speech of last Sunday, Winston Churchill named what he called four climacterics of the war. Give three of them. Mr. Levant.
The fall of France.
That's quite right.
The Leasland Bill.
That's quite right.
And what happened last Sunday or Saturday?
The
Russian
was?
Invasion or counterattack, whichever phrase you like.
Russian. That gives us three. Now, there's one more.
Well, you only asked for three.
I know. You're all right. You've got us over the rapids, Mr. Levant. But I wonder whether you can remember the other.
Munich.
No, the Battle of Britain in the Air... of last September, which at least temporarily proved that the Germans were not supreme in the air. That's right. That gives us four out of four. Now, how about this one from C.A. Pears of Cambridge, Massachusetts? Get two out of three. Identify these scenes of suspense in literature or the movies. I think Mr. Hitchcock is famous for his magnificent manipulation of scenes of suspense. And by the way, I don't think any of these have anything to do with pictures that you made yourself, Mr. Hitchcock. Well, in the first case, a wounded man hangs from a cable car. A wounded man hangs from a cable car. What picture?
Is that The Peril of Pauline?
No. Now, it might be. I wouldn't know. I don't go back as far as you do, Mr. Levin.
What's a cable car?
Cable car. It's one of those, I think it's one of those funicular things that cross chasms and...
Cable car?
Oh.
Got it, Mr. Levin?
A picture directed by a disciple, that's what they said in the paper, Mr. Hitchcock, called
Yes.
Night...
Go ahead.
Night, not train?
Go ahead. Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Train.
Night Train, that's right.
I remember that.
Yes, a very good melodrama with Rex Harrison and Margaret Lockwood.
Who directed it?
Do you remember, Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes, it was directed by a man called Carol Reed. Unfortunately, I never go to the movies, so I wouldn't have seen it.
You don't go to the movies?
Me neither, Mr. Hitchcock.
Well, how do you manage to make any comparisons with the work you do yourself, Mr. Hitchcock? Or don't you care?
No, I try not to.
Just
go. A man once said to me, if you don't see pictures, where do you get your ideas from?
Well, how about this one? You can keep out of this question if you wish, Mr. Hitchcock. It's all right. In this case, a house teeters on the brink of a precipice. That was a very good scene.
Charlie Chaplin's Gold Rush.
You don't think that's a picture, Mr. Hitchcock?
Yes.
You do go to
the house did teeter on the...
Yes, that's quite right. And you did go to see that one.
That's still life to him.
Yes, Charlie Chaplin's picture, The Gold Rush. I think that belongs in your category, Mr.
That's the one I saw.
That's the one you did. Well, we're all right so far. Now, how about this one? Nails are slowly driven into the top of a coffin. Nails are driven into the top of a coffin. Mr. Adams.
Escape.
That's right.
Yeah, I read the book.
Escape, right, with Robert Taylor and Norma Shearer. Well, that gives us three out of three. Here's one from Sherwood Friedman of this city. You're going to hear some drum beats, a series of four different types of drum beats, and I want you to determine the type of dance music that each represents. There are four of them. We have to get three out of four. We've never had a question exactly like this. I'm interested to see how well we can do. Let's have the first. Mr. Hitchcock.
Rumba.
The rumba is right. Yes, very good. Now the second. Mr. Levant.
That's a Viennese waltz, not
absolutely
to be confused
right.
with any other waltz.
Absolutely right. Now the third. Mr. Kieran, that wasn't your hand that was raised.
No,
was it?
Madam.
Oh,
no,
right.
Son.
Mr. Levant.
I'd say that's a conga version of Emperor Jones.
It's a conga, all right. That's very good. Now the fourth and last.
That's nothing.
How about that? We're safe. We've got 3 out of 4. Any guesses on that? Want to hear it again?
No.
All right, then you'll hear it again. That is...
We'll do one more bar.
Mr. Hitchcock.
Is it the bolero?
It is, Mr. Hitchcock. Thank you very much indeed. That's very good. A bolero. That gives us 4 out of 4. Which means that so far, Lucky Strike has paid out absolutely nothing and no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Mr. Cross points out that knowing the facts about tobacco comes in handy today.
Mr. Fadiman, that's because most of us are smoking more in 1941. So, of course, we want a milder cigarette, one made from the lighter, milder tobaccos. Now, tobacco like that costs more than the ordinary kind. Yes, it costs more at auction after auction. But Lucky's pay the price to get it. For example, last season at Carthage, Tennessee, the American Tobacco Company paid 23% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 23% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Now, so it goes at market after market. We pay the price to get the finer, naturally milder, better-tasting tobaccos. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated why Lucky's are in tune with the times?
I believe you have, Mr. Cross, and in just 52 seconds. Now, this evening's performance doesn't please me very much. I haven't been able to stump any of you. Hope I can do better during the second half of the program. Here's one from Mrs. Henderson Rogers of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, right in the heart of the Lucky Strike country. Quote at least 4 lines of poetry in which the poet has made use of the number 7. When I say 4 lines, I mean 4 separate and distinct lines, in which the word 7 is used. Mr. Adams.
We are 7.
All right.
A simple child who lightly draws his breath.
Good enough. That's right. Wordsworth's lines of we are 7. That gives us 1 set of 7s. How about another? Mr. Kieran.
Well, I believe it was Gene Ingelow wrote a whole series of poems, 7 times 1 or 7 and so forth.
Child's poem?
Yes, they're rather nursery style.
All right, good enough. That gives us 2. Mr. Levant?
7 come 11, I'm going to heaven or something like that.
That's perfectly good. A classic couplet, come 7, come 11. I don't know why I'd call it poetry. Mr. Kieran?
Though one were strong as 7, he too with death would dwell. That's from Swinburne.
Gee, I don't know that one.
The Garden of Proserpina.
Very good.
Sins which are 70 times 7.
That's right.
That gives us 3 or 4. There's a one from the Walrus and the Carpenter. About
it's 7 maids with 7 mops.
That's right.
Swept it for half a year.
That's right. And there's a famous one from Mother Goose about the St. Ives incident. Remember that?
I met a... Man with 7 wives.
And it goes on with a great many other 7. That's perhaps not a very difficult one. How about this one from Richard Ahern of New York City? How does each of these figure in fact or fiction? Rickshaw, Bradshaw, Earnshaw, Hawkshaw. We have 4 Shaws. Mr. Hitchcock, you want to start us off?
Hawkshaw was a fiction character. Rickshaw was a...
Hawkshaw was a fiction character. What part did he play?
A detective. Rickshaw is an oriental two-wheeled vehicle.
But how does it occur in literature?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Kipling.
Kipling, Mr. Adams, that's right.
Rickshaw.
The Phantom Rickshaw, as Mr. Levant reminds us. Yes, a famous story. That gives us Rickshaw and Hawkshaw. How about Bradshaw and Earnshaw, Mr. Levant?
Earnshaw was a pitcher on the Philadelphia Athletics. Well,
and
I can't help that. He was very good.
All right. Perfectly okay. He figures in fact. There's another Earnshaw that figures in fiction.
Probably not as good.
I don't know.
Mr. Adams?
I was thinking of the baseball player. It's the only one I ever heard of.
We've had him.
Earnshaw I know. Bradshaw is a... Railroad guide.
Right. What country?
England.
In England, that's right. Well, there is an Earnshaw who figures in fiction.
It's an Earnshaw in one of those English novels.
Yes. So which one? It's
there
a wide field.
There aren't many.
No, it's one of those horror novels.
Yes, you're all right, Mr. Adams. Which one?
Wuthering Heights.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. Wuthering Heights. Kathy Earnshaw in Wuthering Heights. Well, that finishes the Shaws. What's a kickshaw, by the way? Anybody know?
Kelkishaws, it comes from the French Kelkishaws.
I never expected. Wonderful, Mr.
How about G.B.?
We should mention him, yes. G.B. Shaw, Rickshaw, Bradshaw, Earnshaw. I think that cleans up with the Shaw business. Now, how about this one? From Condon Riley of Springfield, Massachusetts. Here's a motion picture. Come music question, get 2 out of 3. In what motion picture did you hear each of these musical selections that are important to the plot? And get 2 out of 3. Let's have the first. Mr. Levan had his hand up at once.
Charlie Chaplin in The Dictator.
Yes, in The Dictator.
He's getting shaved, I think.
Yes, to the strains of what?
To the Brahms Fifth Hungarian Dance.
Attaboy.
Incidentally, almost 3 or 4 out of the New York moving picture critics called it the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody.
Did they?
Yes.
Oh, goodness. I don't suppose you even remember who the fourth was.
Well, one of them's listening in.
See what you can do with the next. Now we have Mr. Levant again. Mr. Kieran looking a little quizzical.
Sounds to me as though I had Paderewski play that.
Well, that may be.
But no, it may be.
I don't think in a motion picture. Mr. Levant.
I want to correct you. Paderewski did never play it.
He did never play it.
You correct me now.
All right, he did not never play it, Mr. Kieran.
He never played it.
He never played
it. No, it's the Ninth Symphony. What picture, I don't know.
The Ninth Symphony,
The Ode to Joy.
Any ideas?
I have no ideas.
No ideas at all.
No.
Any guesses, gentlemen? We really have to get the picture. Picture is Meet John Doe.
Well, you got it.
Remember it now?
No, I remember the picture, but not the Ninth Symphony.
Well, just as Doe was about to jump off the building, I didn't see the picture. I don't remember. But apparently at that point, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Well, it stopped him, I'll say that.
I have to call that wrong. Now I have to get the next one right. Mr. Levant again.
It's a Tchaikovsky B-flat concerto.
Good enough. And the picture.
The picture was The Great Lie, in which Mary Astor gave a very good portrayal of a very nervous pianist.
That's very good, Mr. Levant. I don't think very many people would remember that.
Why?
That's all the way through
the picture.
Is it really?
All the way through.
Which you might have to see in order to answer.
That's pretty snobbish, Mr. Adams. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 and passes us safely on to a question.
How about you, Scott?
Boys, control yourselves. Here's one from Amelia Edgerton of New York City. For what famous artist did each of these women model? The first is Lucrezia. For whom did she model? Lucrezia. Famous artist.
Was that before unions?
This is a long... Yes, it's before George White.
That would have to be probably either Raphael or Michelangelo.
No, not necessarily. No, the famous Italian painter Andrea del Sarto had sort of a combination model here. Lucrezia acted as his wife also. She appears in the poem Andrea del Sarto by Browning, Mr. Kieran. Do you happen to recollect that?
The faultless painter.
That's right. That gives us one wrong, however. Now, for whom did Lady Hamilton model? Mr. Hitchcock?
Romney.
George Romney, yes. The English artist, George Romney. And for whom did Saskia model? Saskia, S-A-S-K-I-A. Sounds like a trade name. Any ideas?
Who was around in those days?
Well, this was sort of 17th century-ish.
Oh, that wouldn't be the Dutch painter, would it?
Which one?
Yeah, there's only one real wonderful... Go ahead, John. Tell him the Dutch
Rembrandt.
Painter.
Yeah. Yes, Rembrandt is right. She was both the wife and model of Rembrandt. That's quite right. That gives us 2 out of 3. Now, here's one from Jack Luzzatto of this city. Can you tell who in literature consumed these enormous quantities of food? I think we ought to get all on this. Who consumed the milk exclusively provided for him by a herd of 17,913 cows? Mr. Kieran.
Gargantua.
Gargantua. That's right. During what period of Gargantua's life?
When he was a child.
When
he
was
did
a
better
child.
When he grew up.
Yes. He just trained on the milk of 17,000 and so forth cows. And where will you find the story of Gargantua, Mr. Kieran?
In Gargantua and Pantagruel.
Yes. By whom?
Dean
Rabelais.
Swift.
Rabelais. No, I think not, Mr. Adam. Now, how about this one? Who consumed elephants brought to it by its mother? Who consumed elephants brought to it by its mother? This is some going. These are full-size elephants, gentlemen.
What's he doing now?
he's just suffering. Well, gentlemen, it's a tough one. It's the mythical animal, the roc, in Sinbad the Sailor. Does that come back to any of you now? Well, that's one wrong. Now, how about this one? Who consumed 20 wagon loads of meat and 10 wagon loads of wine at a meal? Mr. Kieran.
I think that was Dr. Gulliver.
Yes, Dr. Gulliver.
When he was among the The Lilliputian.
Yes, actually, it would be just a normal...
Just a snack.
Well, if he hadn't been among the Lilliputians, it would have been a normal or ordinary Hitchcock meal, but as it was, it amounted to considerable among the Lilliputians. Well, that gives us one wrong and sends $25 in an encyclopedia to Mr. Lutzato, courtesy of Lucky Strike. How about this one from R. Thorvald Krock of San Francisco? Get 2 out of 3. Who watches or overhears each of these scenes or incidents? Who overhears their own funeral oration? Their own funeral oration.
Mark Twain.
You're on the right track.
Well, he made the remark.
No, I don't think so. You mean my reports of my death have been exaggerated?
Yeah.
I don't mean that. But as a matter of fact...
Max Schmeling.
No.
Certainly.
That's true in a way. You mean the...
It's true, definitely.
Somebody in Huckleberry Finn.
You've got the wrong book, Mr.
Tom Sawyer.
Yes, it's Tom, Joe, and Huck in
Max
Tom
Schmeling
Sawyer.
Is Max Schmeling and Tom Sawyer?
Pardon?
He's not in Tom Sawyer.
I bet he wishes he were. I think I have to count that wrong, Mr. Adams. Don't you think so? All right, we'll count that wrong. That means I have to get the next two right. Who overhears his stepfather praying? Mr. Kieran.
Hamlet.
That's
Prince
the one
of Denmark.
That's quite right. And who overhears two women discussing the infidelity of their friend's husband? That's a kind of complicated situation. Who overhears two women discussing the infidelity of their friend's husband? Mr. Adams.
Would that be in The Merry Wives of Windsor?
No, but a modern version of it.
Merry Wives?
No.
Oh, women.
Women, yes.
Yeah.
Claire Luce's play, The Women. And who does the overhearing?
Well, everybody in the audience.
That's true, but particularly one on the stage.
Oh, the alleged nice girl, played by sometimes by Norma Shearer.
I don't think it was. I think it was the manicurist.
Oh, that's right.
Ah, she may have been a nice girl, too. I'm not saying anything against the manicurist. I think I have to count that wrong and send another $25. And instead of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike...
I guessed everyone right. You called everyone wrong.
No, we...
Max Schmeling was right, and
he didn't overhear his actual oration, did he?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
I mean, he was reported...
He may have on the radio.
But I don't think there was a real oration pronounced.
I withdraw. Impolitely.
All right. How about this one? Here's a single-part question, gentlemen, from Frank Manley of Detroit. What is the name of the country bounded by the USSR, China, India, and Iran? Mr. Hitchcock.
Turkestan.
No, it would not be. Turkestan, is Turkestan a country, independent country, or even semi-independent, or rather a region, part of the
Tibet.
USSR? No. Mr. Kieran.
Afghanistan.
Afghanistan would be the right answer. You rushed in where Kieran's feared to tread, Mr. Hitchcock. And that's going to cost us $25 and a set of the Britannica going out to Mr. Manley. And how about this one from Mrs. Joseph Dobos of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Identify these boy-meets-girl situations in various movies and plays. Get 2 out of 3. In the first case, a rich young man meets a white collar girl at her father's home in Philadelphia. Mr. Levan.
Kitty Foyle.
Kitty Foyle, that's right. Now, here's another boy-meets-girl situation. They meet when she sticks her foot out to trip him.
Oh.
Got it, Mr. Levan?
Yes, Preston Sturges' picture with Barbara Stanwyck and Henry Fonda.
That's right.
And I don't know the name of the picture.
Lady Eve.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hitchcock and Mr. Levan. The Lady Eve is quite right. And now, in this case, he falls in love with her at a masquerade ball. Mr. Kieran.
Romeo and Juliet.
There's no question about that. Gives us 3 out of 3. How about this one? From Mrs. A. Nachman of Brookline, Massachusetts. I'm going to ask you to identify each of these terms that are used in connection with the preparation of food. Here's the first phrase, a la creole. A la creole. What would that mean, a la creole, if you saw it on a menu? Mr. Kieran.
Well, it would mean cooked in the Southern style or a New Orleans style.
Which would mean specifically
probably
what?
With a sauce on it.
Made out of what?
Okra.
No, they might use okra in it, Mr. Adams, but more particularly what? Mr. Hitchcock, any ideas on a la Creole, Mr. Levant?
Well, it all depends where you get it, but it usually has tomatoes and spices and pepper and
yes.
Old things in it.
not necessarily old things, but tomatoes and green peppers. Now, suppose you saw something described as a la printanière.
That I know.
You do know that, Mr. Levant?
That's with vegetables.
Yes, with various fresh vegetables.
A bouquetier is the same
spring
thing.
Spring vegetables, quite right. Greenish, probably in color. How about maître d'hôtel? What would that mean if you saw it on a menu? Maître d'hôtel, Mr. Hitchcock.
I think it's a butter mixed with parsley.
Yes, butter sauce, lemon juice, parsley, salt, and pepper. That gives us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one from F. Lewison of New York City? I'm going to ask you to give me the actual names of these famous females. Several of these have been made famous on this program. At least one of them has. First of them is Lady Godiva, Mr. Adams' favorite female. what was her real name? If you wanted to look her up in a phone book, Mr. Adams, what would you look for? Mr. Kieran?
Well, she was a lady. She was a wife.
I'd look her up in the Coventry book.
Yes. Well, she was a lady of Coventry. And what were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
I was just going to say that's all she was, as far as I know.
Yes, lady of Mercia and of Coventry. Now, how about Mona Lisa? She had a real name, Mona Lisa. Mr. Kieran?
La Joconde.
Yes. Her full name would be what?
Madame Joconde.
Lisa del Joconde. And the third lady of the lamp would be what, Mr. Kieran? Or Mr. Hitchcock?
Florence Nightingale.
Yes, Florence Nightingale. And now here's a question that Mr. Cross maintains only you smokers can answer.
The question, Mr. Fadiman, is simply this. Is it good business for the American Tobacco Company to pay so much above the average market price for tobacco? The answer is yes. Not because we say so, but because millions of you smokers say so every time you step up to a cigarette counter. We pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos that make Lucky's a milder, better-tasting cigarette, the kind of a cigarette that gives you more smoking enjoyment. As a result, more and more of you are asking for Lucky's. So you see, it's really the very best of business practices for the American Tobacco Company to pay, for example, 18% more than the market average at Warrenton, North Carolina last season, 27% more at Bowling Green, Kentucky, 34% more at Brookneal, Virginia, and so on. Yes, that's good business for us, because it's good smoking for you. Is it any wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1? Next time, why don't you ask for Lucky Strike?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Now, this evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out the sum of $75 and 3 sets of the Britannica. One time, I thought we weren't going to pay out anything. It would have been terrible. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Hitchcock, for coming to the party this evening. And next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will bat them out as usual, but we have a rather unusual pair of guests. The famous foreign correspondents and authors, first, Mr. John Gunther, who has been with us many times before, and secondly, Mr. Walter Durante. Now remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question should happen to stump our experts, as 3 have tonight, you not only get the sum of $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions, and don't forget to send the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, ladies and gentlemen, is just another way of saying that if you haven't tried a Lucky lately, you don't know what you're missing. By the way, if you're going visiting this weekend, we suggest that you bring your host or hostess a carton of Lucky's. It's sure to make a hit. Remember, with independent tobacco experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.